All right, it is Power Friday on Speaking with Carl Thornton Jr. Going to bring back now an excellent conversation on diversity that featured our guest, yours and mine, Dr. Quincy Birdsong. All right, ladies and gentlemen, you are just in time for Speaking with Carl Thornton Jr. Glad you're with us. Hold on just a minute, and I'm going to be joining you in just a minute, connecting you with our guest, yours and mine, Dr. Quincy Birdsong. We're going to be talking diversity on the program where we really encourage the celebration of diversity. Stay with me. Be right back. All right, ladies and gentlemen, again, it's so good to have you all with us. Of course, I am your loyal host, Carl Thornton Jr., and you are joining me on Speaking with Carl Thornton Jr. for a conversation that I'm going to be having with Dr. Quincy Birdsong. He is Georgia Regents University's Vice President for Academic Planning and Strategic Initiatives. We're going to be discussing one of my favorite topics. It's something that means so much to so many. And that is diversity. And Dr. Birdsong, it is good to have you on with me today. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Truly my pleasure. And I appreciate you for joining me to discuss such a very important matter. But before we go into our discussion of diversity, if you would please share with us more about Dr. Quincy Birdsong, what your specific degrees are in, and your specific role as vice president at GRU.
Sure. I'd be glad to do that. So, like you said, I am the Vice President for Academic Planning and Strategic Initiatives for Georgia Regents University. I also serve as the university's Chief Diversity Officer. So in my role as VP for Academic Planning and Strategic Initiatives, I oversee new program development as well as new initiatives designed and aligned to be part of GRU's mission and vision. In my role as Chief Diversity Officer, I am in charge of creating programs and initiatives that create an inclusive environment for our faculty, students, and staff. My background is mostly in biology and in education. I've been in higher ed for about 13 years, mostly in academic medicine, but most recently in academic administration and academic affairs. So I'm really excited about my opportunity to lead the diversity efforts at GRU, and I'm excited about all the things we have in store.
Well, I tell you what, I'm excited about what's going on. I know that there has been a push for some time, and I think probably starting from the black student population at GRU. In fact, it was actually still being called primarily Medical College of Georgia at the time, to make diversity a much stronger component of life at GRU. But that said, I'd like to ask you, what drew you to the whole arena of diversity?
Well, I'll start answering that question by how I like to define diversity. And diversity to me is the state of being diverse, the state of being different, the state of variety. But for the purposes of my role in higher ed, it's about respect. It's about recognizing individual differences, recognizing that each individual is unique and celebrating those differences and actually maximizing those differences to take our institution to the next level. What drew me to Georgia Regents is the city of Augusta is very diverse. The city of Augusta is a place that's bringing a lot of attention, both from military, cybersecurity, obviously golf brings a lot of attention to Augusta.
Yes, sir.
But Augusta and Georgia Reasons are interested in partnering together to really shape a diverse and global society. And I was excited about the opportunity to be a part of that, to be quite honest with you.
Well, you mentioned a global society, and from time to time we hear and or read that in order for businesses to do well, including multinational corporations that are already very, very successful in their own right, in order for them to continue to excel, they're going to need to be showing diversity within their organizations, embracing diversity as they do business around the world. And it's going to have to be real. It's not going to be rhetoric. It has to be a very, very real part of how they do business. We read and hear that, but is that actual necessary that these companies make diversity a major component of who they are, or can they still continue to exceed and excel without truly moving into diversity?
Well, I think it'll be extremely difficult for any organization to excel without diversity. Diversity and excellence are not, they do not coexist on parallel paths. They're actually functions of one another. So you can't have one without the other. The only way I think that organizations are going to be able to grow and expand their horizons, both in the social sector and as well as the private sector, will be to bring different perspectives. And these different perspectives come obviously from a diversity in the workforce. Diversity of perspectives comes from differences in race, differences in gender, differences in age, physical ability, social and economic status, sexual orientation, gender identity, and the dimensions of diversity go on and on. But unless you have these different perspectives represented and included in all of the aspects of the organization, particularly in the decision-making level of the organization, it's going to be difficult for organizations to compete in this society, and it's going to be difficult for them to be all that they can be and all that they can contribute.
So we're finding out then that hearing the receiving input, getting feedback from people of different walks of life really does impact the bottom line. Does it impact the way people do business? Does it impact the way they're received in other parts of the world, in other parts of even this one country? Or is there something else at play that causes diversity to have an impact?
Well, I think it's the perspectives. We have to start with the perspective. So if, for instance, if the organization has a group of individuals that all have identical perspectives, then you stand the chance of having a stagnant organization. What these different perspectives bring is different ideas that really enable you to think outside of your comfort zone, outside of the box that you created for yourself. And so the different perspectives is very important. But the other part, particularly in my field of higher education, I think that it's going to be necessary to have diversity in your faculty, your students, and your staff. We're dealing with a population between the ages of 18 and 25 that are in the most important decision-making time of their lives. They're going to decide where they're going to live, decide what they're going to do for a living, in some cases decide who they're going to marry. So this time that they're with us in this collegiate experience is really critical to how their view of the world is shaped. And so what we want to do in higher ed is we want to make sure that perspective, that view is a global view, and it's appreciative of all of the differences that individuals have. We have to go beyond just simple tolerance, because when you use the word tolerance, that comes from a posture of privilege that says that a certain group of people decides who is included and who's not included. But we like to move toward diversity as something that we celebrate, something that we embrace, and something that we understand to be not only important, but a necessary component of advancing any vision or mission.
I tell you what, and I appreciate you for bringing that up. In fact, I wanted to just kind of give us an idea, really working with the more familiar, because I know a lot of people think about diversity more along business lines than any other lines, and I wanted to kind of lay that foundation, having us think about that and see the relevance of it in that arena and move it to the very arena that you've moved it to, and that is where you are right now, and that is in the field of education. And it is just as relevant in education as it is in business.
Yes, absolutely.
Do you find that you mentioned the students, and we're basically looking at, as you mentioned, 18 to 25, very, very important decision-making phase of their lives. Is the diversity factor as significant and relevant in their thinking as it is to people like you and others in your department, maybe even the president of the school?
That's a great question. I think from the student perspective, you know, they are coming to us with their various backgrounds, their various perspectives of different kinds of people. Of course, that's going to be limited to their exposure, and so I think it's incumbent upon us as officials in higher ed to make sure that their exposure is broadened. And so how do you do that? Well, you do that by showing them diversity in the faculty. So you want all your students, regardless of their race or gender or any other dimension of diversity, you want them to see that same type of diversity as much as you can in their faculty, in the people that are in the decision-making position. What this does is it gives them an opportunity to see how all of the different people contribute to their education, but contribute to the society that we are actually preparing them to be participants of. You know, it's one thing to say we want to get them across the stage and hand them a diploma, but it's another thing to say, okay, we want to prepare citizens. We want to prepare participants in society. We want to equip them with all the things that they need to contribute in whatever way they want to contribute and to be leaders in whatever field that they're passionate about. And so what enables them to do that is the diversity. If they don't have the different perspectives, they're only going to have one way to look at things, which is going to actually hinder their ability to contribute at the level at which they would like.
So with this push in the academic arena, particularly in med schools,
sure,
to diversify more and to help the students embrace, and I like what you said, celebrate diversity. Do you think that will help with the push that a lot of medical schools have, because there's such a need for more doctors who will be looking at serving inner city, rural, and other areas where maybe there are some medical disadvantages?
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I've been at several institutions that have had very deliberate programs in that regard. And so one of the things that we see with a lot of our minority graduates, our minority applicants, they have a desire to go into primary care where there's definitely a shortage. And then they have a desire to serve underserved communities. And so that is, that's exciting to look at how that could actually turn the dial in the urban communities on better health outcomes. But even more important than that, or equally as important as that, is that these clinicians are interested in research areas that affect these populations as well. So not only are these clinician scientists providing the clinical care, but they're also answering the research questions that are important with regard to many of the other diseases that are prevalent in and particularly underrepresented minority communities, Black, Hispanic, the cardiovascular events, the diabetes, the hypertension, and then there are those diseases that are seen primarily in the African American community with sickle cell, hemophilia, things of that nature. And so these clinicians are providing care to these individuals, but also they're answering the research questions to actually provide better care for this community, which keeps them at the cutting edge of the field.
That is encouraging to hear, especially when you think about how much we hear and read about underserved also occurring in the area of research. Do you think that we can reasonably expect within 10 to 20 years to see some of those research gaps closed and more findings being discovered that can help, whether that be with sickle cell anemia or some of the other issues that tend to impact people of color more?
Yeah, I think we will see that. We're starting to see a change in that a little bit now. I think over the next 15, 20 years, we'll see a lot more movement in that area. What we find is that the funding agencies, the federal government funding agencies, as well as the pharmaceutical industry, they're requiring, particularly in their drug trials, that there be more representation of minorities as research subjects. Historically, you have to understand that most of the human experimentation that was done for drug development was done on Caucasian males, particularly middle age. And so when these drugs were developed, they were developed, and we had good data on how they cured that population. However, we had less data on how they cured other races, other genders. And so pharmaceutical companies and federal government agencies actually required more inclusive participation in research to answer these questions.
Hope is on the horizon. Ladies and gentlemen, our guest, yours and mine, Dr. Quincy Birdsong, and I will be back discussing more diversity and an upcoming summit that we definitely want you to hear about. So stay with us. We'll be right back.